Good evening. I want to begin by telling you the book that I was referring to last week. I think my diction wasn't very good. It was misheard by a couple of people. The name of the book is The Journal, and it goes on to say 1837 to 1861. And it's by William Henry Thoreau. And I recommend it very much. Somebody heard it as The Rose and couldn't find it on Amazon. I was a little clumsy in talking about it, so I apologize. But it's old Henry back in the transcendental days. So we've gotten to number 41. And I think I'll read the next four and then talk about them one by one. This is on page 110. There is one Dharma, capital D Dharma, not many. Distinctions arise from the clinging needs of the ignorant. There's just one Dharma. Distinctions arise from the clinging needs of the ignorant. To seek mind with the discriminating mind is the greatest of all mistakes. This is one of the famous lines from this poem. To seek mind with the discriminating mind is impossible. Rest and unrest derive both of them from illusion. With enlightenment, there is no liking or disliking. Rest and unrest derive from illusion. With enlightenment, there is no liking or disliking. All dualities come from ignorance, ignorant inference. They are like dreams or flowers in the air, foolish to try to grasp them. All dualities come from ignorant inference. They're like dreams or flowers in the air, foolish to try to grasp them. Go on to the last one, the 45. Gain and loss, right and wrong, such thoughts must finally be abolished at once. Bam. So we talk about Dharma this and Dharma that. We talk about Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. We talk about the many dharmas, meaning the many things. Maybe you could call them the many dualities, how we divide up the world. But when capital D Dharma is mentioned, it's talking about the laws, or the great law, the one law of the universe, or the great truth behind or within everything, all truth. And in Taoism, I think they say all truths can be boiled down to one or something like that. It's the part that we can only point to, but that we begin to get some idea of, some feeling for, as we sit and begin to feel the insubstantiality of our sense of ourself and the limitations to this story that we've created about our life. we begin to actually see through this wish for things to be solid and to stay put, as we see how transient all things are, our mind, our friends, our world, our life. And with that kind of insight that comes from sitting, we begin to get a kind of taste of Dharma. It's a very vulnerable place. It's our most tender place. We try to sort of buck ourselves up and soldier on. But in face of Dharma, we turn back. Every single one of these little lines can be read just for Zazen instruction. Musong has made a very interesting commentary that goes into a lot of philosophy, sort of Buddhistic, Dharmic philosophy. But it's really it's really just instructions for our sitting. There's just one Dharma. There's just one place to be. There's just this. Musong says, when we taste the Dharma, then we can let go of our preferences. That actually experiencing something more than ourself gives us a chance to allow things to come and go as they will. It gives us a kind of equanimity, a sense of balance, so that when something not good comes, it doesn't knock us over. And when something good comes, it doesn't knock us over either. But that we can take things as they come. And as we say, be with them. To seek mind with the discriminating mind is the greatest of all mistakes. So that's a very one of the first things that Dogen expressed was an old Chinese saying about how do we sit Zazen? How do we think in Zazen? And he said, think not thinking. And how do you do that? Non-thinking. So it's becoming familiar with how our mind is working. Usually we identify with our thoughts. Oh, this is my good thought, and this is my bad thought, and this is a thought I'd better get away from quickly. But to simply watch thinking happen without engaging with it, not inviting it in for tea, as Suzuki Roshi said. Our relationship with our thoughts changes. As Musong says, thinking doesn't help if you're hungry for the truth. You can't think your way into what's true. The best way is to simply what he talks about is that it's beyond language. I'm not sure it's I wouldn't quite agree with that, because I think language is so essential and inherent for us, but that language can drive us into too much thinking. We think in words usually, though in emotion also. But if we're only involved with words, we can never experience how things are. We're just naming them, separating them out. Which brings me to my one of my stories that many of you have heard, that I sat finally, I think, a whole session with Coben many years ago, and was very quiet when I came home and had a good night's sleep and got up in the morning still feeling very quiet and looked out the window and saw the most remarkable bird I had ever seen. It was just amazing. He was just standing on the ground right outside the window. And it was fairly large. I mean, it was like here. And it had a very slick, smooth, beautiful body and a white ring around its eye and a yellow bill. And then this very velvety, soft chest with a sort of subtle reddish-orange color. I stood and stared and stared at it because I had never seen anything so beautiful and so remarkable. And then in the way in the back of my mind, I heard this tiny voice saying, "Robin." It was a robin. And then, of course, I said, "Oh, it's just a plain old robin." And you can see, if you don't let the word get in the way of it, then you can just experience the remarkable nature of the actual bird. It doesn't happen to us very often. But I think Sengkan is pointing us in that direction. And it's how we can and do experience our life when we stand up from zazen often. The world is so new, so fresh and so new, because we've dropped that judging mind. We've dropped our effort to think our way into things and try to figure it all out and name it all, and just see what's really there. It's fantastic. Rest and unrest derive from illusion. With enlightenment, there is no liking or disliking. In other words, we think we've got something. I've got the robin. I can rest in the robin. I can feel like something happened and was accomplished there. But no, you can't rest in it at all. It came and it went. We can't hold on to any of it, which is why this is such a vital practice, because we're starting over and over again. So it's always fresh, it's always new, and we never really know what's going to happen next. All dualities come from ignorant inference. It's a funny thing to say, ignorant inference. They are like dreams or flowers in the air, foolish to try to grasp them. So Musong says about this that dualities, choosing right and wrong and good and bad and like and dislike, are all ignorant guesses, he says. We're just trying to kind of foolishly figure out where everything fits in this little kind of matrix that we put together that we call myself. Well, it fits here. No, maybe it fits better over here. I like this person. No, then they do something that I don't like, so I put them over here. And we're always shifting, moving everything around and trying to figure out where they fit in this little world of us. And what Sankhan is saying is we're arbitrarily making up stories about things. The liking and disliking, the wanting and not wanting, they're like dreams or flowers in the air. Flowers in the air is an image that runs all through Chinese and Japanese literature as what you see, those little things dancing in your eyes that maybe look like something. It's when your eyes aren't in very good shape. So they use that as a metaphor for imagination, what's not real. Seems to be real because something's happening there, but it's not out there anywhere. It's just floating around in here. So we rationalize, says Musong, our preferences. We can make up good reasons for why we like and don't like what we do. But often what we say about things is based on a past experience that may or may not have been true in the first place. He uses the old rope in the darkness. You're in the dark and you see something that looks like a snake and you get terrified and your adrenal system is pounding away and you're all sweaty and then somebody turns on the light and it's just a rope. So it's a kind of useless projection until you actually find out what's there. And of course it isn't just a rope. It's a rope, and it could, of course, be speaking a great truth also, the truth of presence and being. An artist would see the rope and see the presence of it and try to express it in some incredible way. Even an ink drawing of a coiled rope could be a deep expression of Dharma. Gain and loss, right and wrong, such thoughts must finally be abolished at once. So how we abolish is the hard part. How we can agree with ourselves to abolish our thoughts, and actually I think just recognizing them as they pass through is the best. And to keep in mind right speech. It's our one genius besides the opposable thumb, which makes us able to make things. But our thinking is based on our language and on our speech. And our thoughts are mostly speech. And our speech we can study and make a part of our awareness a great deal more than we usually do. As part of the importance of how to be with. As soon as we cast things into language, we have created a barrier already. Unless we're careful. Or if not careful, at least willing to listen and accept as well as to speak. So, of course, we're always in a hurry. We're always in a rush to get someplace, and so it's very easy to get caught by our quickness and try to settle everything as quickly as we can so we can go on to the next. And that in itself is what creates our use of language that gets in the way. When we say things to get things over with, rather than waiting and speaking from a quiet place. It's nice to think that we can just always act and think from a quiet and speak from a quiet place. It's a wonderful thing to aim for. And it changes our relationship with our world. The more we're able to meet the world in this kind of quiet place where we're in balance and where we don't have to say something until we really know what we're going to say and then say it from the heart. It's a wonderful practice. It's a lifetime practice, right speech. So that's as far as I got, these five. But maybe you all have something to add or subtract from all of this.
So, this famous line, I've already forgotten the words, but just the was it your dharma with the discriminating mind?
It's the mind. It's the mind.
So, it made me think of how you said before that the Zen practice is more about sort of letting yourself be that or be the meditation, like what are we supposed to be doing while we sit here?
Yeah.
And so I guess, let's see, and then you were saying that maybe the best way to do that is just to know our thoughts, to watch them, and try to know them through the storytelling that they are, or not become so involved and invite them to tea. The way I actually practice this is by just sitting here and just sitting. Is that okay? Is there something
I should
be doing more?
You can't do any more.
Okay.
It is just sitting, but of course many things happen as you sit.
They do.
You hear things, you feel things, you think things, mm-hmm. and as they come and go, you can get caught by them.
Mm-hmm.
And get all entranced by really important thought.
Mm-hmm.
But in Shikantaza, you just keep coming back and just being where you are.
Mm-hmm. Right. I have a question. I've been thinking lately sometimes that meditation, part of it is that it's just so boring. Everything else seems wondrous.
Yes.
It's almost like a practice being really excruciatingly boring, bored with my thoughts, bored with what I'm doing.
Yes.
Yes. Do you think that there's something to that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. It's nice to hear that.
Because we start out being in love with ourselves, mm-hmm. and our thoughts and our life and all of that. It's so fabulous. And then after a while, you see it going around and around, and you think,
It's easier not to be so involved.
Yes.
Be involved in
yes. Way. Or involved in a different way.
Yeah. Mm.
Samia?
I was trying to formulate the same question or observation lately about also watching my thoughts and judging it like, I just ate 3 brownies. I could have just had one and it would have been the same. I know I'm going to feel bad. Why did I do that? And then just noticing that and say, okay, here it is. Here comes the judgment, you know. And it's just wonderful to enjoy it. And I said maybe 2 weeks later I'll be 5 pounds heavier. That wouldn't work very, you know. But even that, and it's just the noticing, and it's amazing how the okay comes right after it. It's like,
yeah.
It just keeps coming back. It's so simple. Why is it so difficult sometimes? That. And the other thing, totally different thing, last night on TV, there was an interview with a young woman called Lady Gaga. Have anybody heard of her?
No.
My daughter.
Dan knows.
Well, my daughter hears her all the time, and I've heard of the name, and I heard the music. And my daughter and her friends in the back, all the words. And of course, I have to listen to it. Because if I turn the music off, God knows what will happen. So I'm going like this, and of course, thinking it's really stupid. And they're looking at me thinking I'm nuts, you know. So of course, all this music and my judgment on, you know, not much in there. So last night, the interview with her, the most beautiful young woman I have ever seen, her face. And then she has this wig that's all blonde, and it's up to here. And on with her songs and her videos and how much she has accomplished. She writes all her music. She puts the sets. They are unbelievably artistic. They are way extremely out there, but so well done, so well rehearsed, so well practiced. You know, so it's like here I am making fun of my daughter about liking something. But way beyond that, if I didn't know better, I would think she's been sitting for 60 years zazen, sashins right and left. The way she spoke, every word pronounced, the big words that I don't know what they mean were there. I was just like this by her. And a musician, an artist, and she refers to her music as liberating. That she doesn't liberate people, but hopefully through her songs, and each song has a message, and it comes from experience. She writes them. It's like, where does somebody that young know so much? In my book, so enlightened. I was shocked. I mean, her crazy, her videos are very out there. So young. Where does that come from?
We're born with it.
But we're all so different.
Yes. We're all born with some of it.
It took me 48 years to be able to sit sometimes for 40 minutes without falling asleep and all by myself. And here she is, 23.
Yeah.
Lady Gaga. And I told Maya yesterday how impressed she says, really, you like her?
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, it's a miracle.
That's the best part.
Right. You know, so she was so happy that I liked her.
Is she mostly appealing to kids Maya's age? Well, is it young teens?
Do you? I guess it was, well, they're young.
Melissa's thrilled.
I mean, I listen to Bach and some jazz and, you know,
yeah,
the old people stuff. And now that I heard her, it's like, why didn't I like her before? I mean, I kind of did just to please my kids,
yeah,
you know. But talking about it's all good or whatever, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
But you're getting to know. Once you get to know something or someone more intimately, then suddenly all your resistance breaks away.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah. Making the judgment, or, oh, this is for kids, and they're repeating those words. And like she would say, then the hora, and Maya was telling me, what's the hora? I'm thinking, well, it sounds Jewish. Torah, hora. But no, the guy asked her, what? It's horror. It's like, oh, I love you all with your horrible stuff and that. And she's talking about the yin and yang, and life is this and this, and it's all lumped together. It's like, wow. Excuse me, Maya, it's not horror. It's horror. Yeah, it's amazing. So, yeah, the judgment, though. You know, don't judge anything. You don't know anything about it yet.
Yes.
And then I listen to that young, enlightened human being. It's great. Yeah.
It's great.
It is.
Can you read the first line that you read tonight again? Mind.
There is one dharma. Or the second one, to seek the mind with a discriminating mind.
To seek the mind with a discriminating mind.
Is the greatest of all mistakes.
Is the greatest of all mistakes. I was listening to Bree's question about setting and the resistance to want to set, the... you know, my head used to tell me, oh, this is a waste of time, this is stupid, this is boring, yeah, this is, right, all the things. And it's like practice is everything that the world, my observation is the world is trying, is all about me inflating me. Me be more, me be more. I got to compete, I've got to catch up, I've got to, right? And so I come in and I set, right? And so I'm making, and even in practice, and so I hear that line. I read and study a lot of Krishnamurti. You know Jay Krishnamurti?
Yes.
And so I'm not much on discipline, practice in a lot of Buddhist, right? The making of effort. What was the line again? To seek mind with the...
With mind.
With the, what was the word? Discriminating?
Discriminating mind.
Right. I look for enlightenment. I look for enlightenment. I make effort. I look for enlightenment. I look for enlightenment. I look. The eye that looks is the obstacle to seeing.
Yeah.
And so I so how does one set with non-setting or non-thinking? As you know, there's no how. There's no how. There's no God. Don't we wish there was a formula?
No, not even a formula. It's easier than simpler than that, as Samia was saying. It's so simple that we try to make it more complicated, because that's how we're trained, for one thing. I think most of us are pretty highly trained intellectually, and that is a big help in one way, but in other ways it really gets, it's a big hindrance.
I thought of the Dhammapada line with reference to mind, and I can't remember it exactly, but it goes, alone and bodiless, it travels about, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I say it, I try to be aware of body here, right here. And then even my head, just and the brain cell, the meat, and I'll just see it, these thoughts. I'm like, look at it go. But this is here, but it is everywhere else, right? And I go, and that's what I identify as me and these thoughts.
Yeah.
Right? That's me. And so... thank you for the teaching. It's very powerful tonight.
And it's time to stop. Yes, thank you for your questions, all of you. And for Lady Gaga. Well, big gift.